You get what you pay for. Efficient, high-quality service from Perfect Painting and Decorating. In business under the same name since 1975, Perfect Painting and Decorating supplies superior service for both interior and exterior painting, decorative finishing, wallpapering, plastering, drywall and taping, and wood refinishing. For your decorating needs, Perfect Painting and Decorating can custom tint right on the job site. Imagine no interruptions, thorough preparation, professional tradesmen, top-of-the-line materials, meticulous cleanup. Get the job done right the first time. It may cost a bit more for quality, but it's worth it. For a free estimate, call Perfect Painting and Decorating at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974. You'll be glad you did.
I consider trial by jury as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its Constitution. So said Thomas Jefferson. What does this mean? Nothing less than that a juror has more power in a particular case than a judge, congressman, or president, and can judge the law. A juror has the right and power to nullify unjust law by voting not guilty, contrary to the jury instructions that many judges routinely give that jurors must apply the law as given by the judge. This is a very important check on the power of oppressive government. In the past, jury nullification has asserted its historical importance concerning fugitive slave laws of the 1850s, prohibition in the 1920s, and draft cases in the 1960s. Oppressive gun laws, tax laws, and drug laws are other instances where the people through its jury said no to government. For more information, call the Illinois Fully Informed Jury Association at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974.
The following paid program is sponsored by Prairie Fire Communications. Opinions expressed do not necessarily represent those of staff and management of WRMN Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Freedom Rings. I am your host, Kenneth John. With me is my excellent producer, Mike. How you doing?
Doing fine. How are you today?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah? Did you enjoy your weekend?
It was all right.
What did you think of the sports that was on TV? Did you watch any of it? Do you care?
I watched about 2 minutes of the Pro Bowl.
Yeah?
It's the worst all-star game of professional sports.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the worst.
Nobody wants to get injured.
Right.
And it's just kind of, they like go through the motions.
It's flag football. It's fine. It is.
Right. They ought to just give honorary awards, I think, and not have a game.
I do appreciate the fake punt and the two fake onside kicks and the specialty. The double reverse handoff throw. That stuff is fun. But yeah, it's just a worthless game to watch. It really is.
And I saw the end of the Heat Bulls game.
Yeah, that's too bad, too.
Yeah, Derrick Rose is like, I think he was tired. It looked like he was tired at the end. He was coming short with the shots. And
yeah, you can't blame him.
He's an unbelievable player.
Yeah.
You know.
He did what he could.
Not complaining.
Well, that's one of those teams we have to beat, though.
Got to beat. Of course, it was at Miami.
Well,
you know.
Yeah. The last two games are the last three now, though.
Yeah. I'm not worried about the Bulls.
I'm not either.
So, yeah, but we have no real football to report on. Who's going to win next Sunday?
My head says the Patriots. My heart wants the Giants.
Wants the Giants?
Yeah.
How could you be a Chicagoan and be for the Giants?
It's hard because I'm an NFC fan. I'm an American League fan. I always root for the American League in the series, and I always root for the NFC in the Super Bowl. So that's how I come up with those two.
I see. Okay.
Sorry, New England.
I don't have any. I don't think I have a preference. I just hate New York. So.
Okay.
But New England, it would be fun to see somebody else beat New England. But I don't know. New England's a great team. I'm probably leaning towards New England.
Go commercials. That's what I'm watching it for.
Go commercials?
I can't wait to see the new commercials, yeah.
Oh, there you go. Okay. All right. And I wasted my time, an hour of my time, watching the premiere show of Luck. On HBO,
which
had Dustin Hoffman in and Nick Nolte.
Okay. No good? Not really.
I thought it was
not.
Horrible.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I just didn't even know what was going on.
Okay.
It was about, you know, betting and horse racing, and it was like, you remember Robert Altman, the director? It was kind of that formula of, like, reality. And they try to make reality like these people have manure in their mouth when they talk, and are a lot of them are Hispanic, so it's spoken English. And, you know, with drama, I always learned that you have to magnify reality in order to portray reality. You know, you have to make it bigger than life in order to communicate.
Uh-huh.
Well, here, they try to make it just reality, and there's no communication. I didn't know what the hell was going on with it. It's pretty stupid, I thought. So that's I'm not recommending Luck. And usually HBO comes up with great stuff, but not this time. All right, let's go on to the stupid and or outrageous regulation of the week. I guess this is in the outrageous category. I think I'm just going to read this. This is pretty amazing stuff. According to Kern County Sheriff Denny Youngblood, it may be months before an investigation determines exactly what happened Friday night when a sheriff's deputy hit and killed two pedestrians in Oildale. I don't know what, to be honest with you. Oh, it's California. Police responded to the incident, took the deputy to the hospital, and arrested grieving relatives on the scene. Daniel Hiller was out of gas during an evening motorcycle ride, blah, 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 while walking his bike to gas station. The 20-year-old father of two ran to a family friend named Crystal Jolly. The pair was crossing the street at a widely recognized intersection when they were fatally blindsided by a vehicle traveling at a speed well in excess of the posted speed limit. Despite the fact that darkness had descended, the driver hadn't turned on his headlights. The victims were killed instantly. Within minutes, police swarmed the scene and arrests were made, none of which involved the driver. Excuse me, Deputy John Swearingen of the Kern County Sheriff's Office. The four people arrested were relatives of the victims who got into what the sheriff's office described as an altercation with California Highway Patrol officers when they attempted to identify the victims. Quote, I was at home on Friday night working on my car when someone came running over and told me that a deputy ran over my daughter in the street, unquote, recalls Jimmy Clevenger, Jolly's father. I ran down here. I was very upset. The next thing I know, they had me by the neck and threw me to the ground and said I resisted arrest. My daughter was dead in the street, and it was their fault. The outraged relatives were taken to jail and faced criminal charges. Swearingen, the killer, was taken to the hospital and wasn't compelled to undergo drug or alcohol screening. The posted local speed limit is 45 miles an hour. According to several witnesses, Swearingen blew through the intersection at a speed of between 75 and 90 miles per hour. Despite the fact he was obviously in a hurry, Swearingen didn't activate his sirens or running lights, according to at least one eyewitness, his headlights. Sheriff Donnie Youngblood told the Bakersfield Californian that the deputy was responding to a report of a stolen vehicle with a suspect still at the scene when he struck his victims. This would mean that he was not involved in a high-speed pursuit. Furthermore, as some skeptical witnesses pointed out, the main office of the sheriff's department is about a mile or two west of the intersection where the two were killed. He was headed in that direction at the time of the incident. This suggests the deputy wasn't motivated by an urgent call from an isolated or overmatched comrade, but rather engaging in a favorite pastime of uniformed adolescents, kicking ass and driving fast. Some residents of Oildale, a suburb of Bakersfield, described the Kern County Sheriff's deputy as notorious for their habits of speeding through the town's narrow streets, blithely ignoring speed limits without bothering to activate their lights or sirens. They have no consideration for the other public, objects Michelle Cameron, distant relative of Jolly. Excuse me. Oh, let's see. The complaints continue in this article. people had complained ahead of time to the department about this kind of driving. Under Section 192C2 of the California state law, the deaths of Hiller and Jolly resulted from an act of vehicular homicide, one involving gross negligence and therefore felony. No charges have been filed against Swearingen, and the deputy faces only an administrative inquiry rather than a criminal investigation. The outcomes of the administration procedure isn't exactly shrouded in mystery. What gets me is we already know the outcome, complained Anna Rodriguez, one of Hiller's friends to a local reporter. The officer will go on paid suspension, and then they will say he didn't do anything wrong, and that will be the end of it. This is life in America today, folks, in today's American police state. It continues and continues and continues, and the citizens get military tribunals throwing away the key without a lawyer. With the National Defense Authorization Act, and the police in charge get to murder, participate in vehicular homicide, and, yeah, SWAT teams murder with impunity. And that's justice here in America, folks. Time for a revolution. And we will talk about that with our next guest, Gary Barnett, who's a self-described anarcho-capitalist. He writes for LouRockwell.com quite often, and we will talk to him after we break with him after we break for a few messages.
I consider trial by jury as the only anchor yet imagined by man by which a government can be held to the principles of its constitution. So said Thomas Jefferson. What does this mean? Nothing less than that a juror has more power in a particular case than a judge, congressman, or president, and can judge the law. A juror has the right and power to nullify unjust law by voting not guilty, contrary to the jury instructions that many judges routinely give that jurors must apply the law as given by the judge. This is a very important check on the power of oppressive government. In the past, jury nullification has asserted its historical importance concerning fugitive slave laws of the 1850s, prohibition in the 1920s, and draft cases in the 1960s. Oppressive gun laws, tax laws, and drug laws are other instances where the people through its jury said no to government. For more information, call the Illinois Fully Informed Jury Association at 847-426-1974. That's 847-426-1974.
Are you politically homeless? Are you tired of being taxed and regulated by the Democrats? Or regulated and taxed by the Republicans? Would you like to pursue your own dreams without the interference of government? Well, then America's most successful upcoming party, the Libertarian Party, is your political home. The Fox Valley Libertarian Party is your local libertarian group working hard to restore the freedoms of our country once held dear. Yes, you can fight City Hall and win. We did. Find out how. With your help, we will make the 21st century the century of liberty for all. We hold monthly meetings at Diamond Jim's Gas Grill, 325 Meyer Avenue in East Dundee, at the corner of Meyer and Barrington Avenues, on the last Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m. Call 847-426-1974 for more information. That's 847-426-1974. Eternal vigilance is the price of liberty.
My producer always comes up with the best selection. I mean, it's my selection of bumper music, but you know exactly what to choose at the right time. Gary Barnett, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to be here.
It looks to me that the American populace is going to get fooled once again. This coming.
Well, that's a constant. So.
I know for you as a self-described anarcho-capitalist, maybe you don't really, I don't know if you care about elections, if you participate them in or not. I still do, and I have to admit being very frustrated, although I think we're making inroads with Ron Paul. People still don't, there's so many people that just don't seem to get it.
Well, I would agree. I think the best thing about what's happening because of Ron Paul being here, where he is in this election, is just the fact that he's able to get more people to listen to what his message and what his beliefs are. You know, that in and of itself is going to change some minds. It's going to get a lot of young folks more excited about freedom and liberty, at least maybe give them the impetus to study a little bit more and understand, you know, exactly what it is. I mean, in this country today, in my opinion, people really have no concept of what freedom and liberty are. It's a lost, it's a lost thought process and a lost ideology. So with Ron Paul there, it certainly is making more people aware, and I think that's probably the most important thing that's going to happen, you know, because of it.
Yeah, and there is room for optimism because of seeing how the young people are reacting to Ron Paul. But let me throw out a caution out to you. I remember the 60s, and, you know, it wasn't the 60s was not a libertarian movement, but there are aspects of it, especially on as far as non-intervention and personal rights. And unfortunately, that generation is the generation that has imposed martial law in this country. So I'm a little worried that maybe it's a natural process that the young people get absorbed into the establishment, and then they lose their principled radical freedom beliefs. Inevitable, you think, or it could be something different this time?
Well, I mean, I think it's just part of the psyche of people these days. I mean, this stuff is not accidental. Our society, as far as, you know, especially considering the government education system, you know, society in and of itself, a whole, has been being dumbed down for so long. And, you know, they're taught or habituated from minute one, you know, from small children, to be good citizens and support the state. It's not to watch the state and be free and make sure the state doesn't get out of line. It's support everything the state does. And this thing is, you know, it's complicated. It's many-fold. But, you know, the one thing is the design that's taken place has to do with a lot of things. But the welfare, warfare, state mentality, you know, has been drummed into people for the past 100 years. It's gotten worse, of course, and since 9/11, you know, it escalated beyond imagination. The police state, the power of government, you know, the spending and what have you. But the, you know, once people become dependent on any system, they're going to support the system because that is their livelihood, basically. And you've got a society here in America that, it's not 100%, but it's, you know, most everyone at one stage or another, one position or another, is dependent on the state. And then with the warfare, you know, the warfare imperialistic state that we have now, also the only way that can happen is if the people support it. And they do. And that's, you know, they're taught to be afraid, taught to be fearful. They're taught that they can't survive without government. They have to have their checks. They have to have their benefits. And once you get a society at that level, when it gets to that level, it's very, very difficult to change it. I have stated on, gosh, many occasions, because of that situation, you know, I firmly believe that, you know, a revolt, and I'm talking about a peaceful revolt, or some sort of major revolution, to rid ourselves of this albatross of government, at least this government, you know, the only way that's going to happen in my mind now is if we have some sort of an economic collapse.
My question was going to be, maybe it's going to take some sort of complete collapse of the established system before those in the establishment are going to decide it's not working anymore.
You know, I do have enough faith in people. You know, I'm not a pessimist, although some think I am, but I'm certainly not. I do have enough faith in people to think that or believe that if they are pushed to the limit and backed up to the wall and they have to survive or die, that they will come around. Doing it before that time, I'm not so optimistic. So, and that's why I have the attitude I have, and I think any kind of a major economic collapse where people lose everything or they lose most everything, they're not going to be supported by the state because the state is not in a position to do so. you know, then I think people, you know, figure out that, oh, I have to do something on my own. And once that happens, then you get, a revolution. The problem with waiting till that stage to get this going is normally when it gets to that level and you have a revolution, it becomes violent, and that, you know, destroys the entire effort in itself. So.
And I think what you're describing, I think, is the problem I think we have is that I think there's statistics that would show that 90 to 95% of the people in the world think only concretely. Only 5 to 10% either have the ability or choose to think abstractly. And so, as you say, until the proverbial crap hits the fan of an individual, they don't seem to get it. 90% of them. So ten percent of us might be shouting out the alarm of what's coming, but until it happens to them, for some reason, they just still don't seem to get it.
Like I said, it's a point of survival. If they don't have to do it, you know, if they don't have to do something that's against what, you know, their normal thinking is, you know, then they won't. And, you know, the system was built this way purposely. It's like I said, it's a design system. It doesn't matter how far back you go in history. You're always going to see that all government at one time or another has been going to become tyrannical or imperialistic or both. And, you know, the system will eat itself and until it fails, just as it did in Rome. And, you know, once it fails, then you start over. Invariably, people do the same things. They start out with a proper mindset and want to do the right thing.
What happened to learning the lessons of history? Newt Gingrich considers himself this great historian. and you just mentioned about all these things that happened in the past, and it's inevitable. And if this guy had, I guess maybe that's an ounce of a soul or of principle, maybe he would get it. But I mean, he's proposing what, a Cuban Spring now?
Well, he gets it. I mean, this is what he wants. I mean, you're talking about, you know, power-hungry politicians, the few that rule over the rest. I mean, United States today is an oligarchy, and I have no doubt about that. And, you know, these are the people that want to run things and control things. It's not that he might believe, you know, some of the things he says, but he's dishonest, so I don't know that he really can. All these politicians, they want the same things. They want power, they want money, and want control. I mean, this is the way of rulers and governments. It's always been the way.
Unfortunately, that's true. We should back up a little bit and say you are, I believe, a financial advisor, and you're out of state of Montana.
My name is Gary Barnett, and I own a independent investment firm for the past 24 years. My corporation's Barnett Financial Services Incorporated, and I'm in Lewistown, Montana, which is about as far away from things as I could possibly get. I'm in the dead center of Montana, small, beautiful town, beautiful area, and I have clients all around the United States and probably all 20 states currently. But given our technology, I can work from anywhere, and that's why I have my offices here.
Well, when I think of Montana and anarcho-capitalism, I think of one of my favorite movies. I wonder if you agree with me or not. And that would be Legends of the Fall, which I think you could arguably say is an anarcho-capitalist film.
Well, there's a lot of lessons there. you have the support the state and go to war mentality,
right,
for portions, and then you've got the screw the government aspects on the other side. So yeah, it's a great movie. And,
right, and the congressman brother who supports the a prohibition which supports his buddies, you know, with the monopolistic control of the alcohol,
right,
distribution. and the father and the other son deciding that they're going to go with the real true free market, you know. So
yeah, it's pretty interesting. You know, it's funny how a lot of these movies replicate what is real, and that certainly there's a lot of good things to pick up in a movie like that.
So being in having your expertise in the financial realm, what do you see in the near future or not so near future for America and the world? I mean, we're living in a world economy now. What is your prognostication?
Well, I can't predict on a time frame basis. It's just impossible. And the reason that is there's absolutely no logic in these markets. They're manipulated. So you've got a pretty hard circumstance there to deal with. But if you're going to look at it in total, then you have to consider, you know, the real things going on and what the consequences of those are going to be. And the debt, of course, to me is the most important thing. From a market standpoint, the debt is so huge, it is impossible to overcome it. There is a way to fix the situation, but that is very dramatic and is not going to happen in any kind of a political sense. So when you're looking at debt according to government, we're sitting with about a $15 trillion debt, and we're running $1.5 to $2 trillion annual deficits.
Say nothing about the unfunded liabilities, which are $100 trillion.
There, but there's also probably $7 trillion sitting at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac off the books that's never been put on the debt when the government nationalized those companies, which runs it way up. The unfunded liabilities are somewhere in the neighborhood of $115 trillion, in my opinion.
Wow.
And going forward. And then also, you've got the hidden money printing that's taking place. The Fed alone, that is known, has shipped $16 trillion into central banking systems around the world that they claim to not know where any of it is. And the problem is when this money, comes back into the system or gets back into the street, that's when the huge price inflation, the inflation's already taken place and is still taking place, but the price inflation then, will be a consequence and it will become massive at some point. I see no way around that. Same with interest rates. Interest rates are being artificially held down. Now they're, Fed's claiming, Bernanke said the other day, they're gonna make sure they keep rates at zero till 2014. All this is going to do is exacerbate the problems financially. It's going to make any collapse that much worse. And there's really no way to overcome this other than what I would call a structured or just a complete repudiation of debt and go bankrupt and start over. And they're not going to do that. I mean, this is not that's not what politicians are geared to do.
No, they'd rather allow the rapid inflation to happen. Right now, Iran, I guess, has decided they want to trade with their oil with China, and is it India also or Russia?
Yeah, I think it's wonderful.
In gold. Although, I guess I read somewhere it said that the British are going to try to say that's illegal, that they can't do that.
Well, the United States is the one that's had the monopoly on oil for, 27, 8 years, I don't know the date, when they made the deal with OPEC and, the U.S. claims all right and they will kill anyone or go to war against anyone that tries to buck that system.
Right.
That all oil worldwide has to trade in dollars. And this trade the other day, and I never have verified it 100%, but, supposedly India purchased oil directly from Iran and paid them in gold, and China is considering the same thing. And China and India both have been buying all the gold they can get their hands on for some time, which is a very, very wise move.
Well, of course, that's what Saddam Hussein was about to do right before he got bound.
Well, and same with Chavez, and the same with Iran when they, years ago, when they were going to try to build and open their own oil bores. And of course, look who the United States goes after, the same people that are wanting to trade, free trade on their own countries with their own natural resources. So, it's pretty telling. I wrote a short blurb about, this oil trade the other day, but that's just another nail in the coffin here of war. And I'll tell you, any war with Iran first would be immoral and unholy, and completely aggressive. But it could easily turn into a World War III situation.
Absolutely,
you're going to have the entire Middle East in a complete uproar. Not that it isn't already, but it would be even worse. Then you're going to include Israel and the United States and NATO. And also, you've got the partners of Iran, which are Syria and India and China.
And do the warmongers really think that China or maybe Russia are just going to sit back?
Well, and Russia, Russia and Iran have had mixed relations for some time, but they are trading partners.
Right.
And China's a huge trading partner. A huge part of their oil comes from Iran. So I don't think they're just going to lay down and say, well, we're just going to starve over here. That's what I'm saying. You could end up having, that entire region and several nuclear powers all, in a conflict at one time. And that's a very dangerous situation.
Very dangerous situation. So it looks like either prospects for war, or if the United States decided to back off a little bit and allow the trading of gold internationally in the oil markets, then those dollars would come back to the United States, wouldn't they? The start of the rampant price inflation.
Well, yes, and you have to look at what's going on. I mean, the reason China hasn't just dumped all of their debt because, the reason the dollar's going down, I mean, there's multiple reasons. But a major part of that, I mean, it's all purposeful. It's purposely done. Every time the dollar goes down, the debt reduces by that amount. Anybody holding debt in dollars, like China with about $1.2 trillion, if the dollar loses half its value, well, their debt just, they just lost half of their debt that they're not going to get paid back.
Right.
So, now China's now not buying treasuries. And I think they have been selling some. If they're able to get enough gold, they can actually dump this debt, sell the debt on the market, and the gold will protect them on the back end. And that hasn't been the case. I think that's part of the reason that they've been buying so much gold is to protect themselves from dollar loss. And that's pretty important because if China ever does dump the debt or any major country dumps U.S. treasuries, which would be in their best interest, then the inflation will become massive overnight. And, these things are all risks. I'm not saying they're going to happen or when.
Mm-hmm.
But the risk is getting greater, on a daily basis.
And now, a lot of these Republican, I don't hear Ron Paul saying this, but a lot of Republican candidates are complaining about China manipulating their currency. Of course, that's all we do here in the United States. But can I explain what they're talking about?
China haven't let their currency float, with the dollar. They've kept it at more of a, I've owned the yuan for a long time, and it's been very, very, very stable. And China's got their problems. They've got real estate problems. They've got, they've never had the debt load, but they've got problems over there too, and they've got a governing system that, is involved in the private sector. So, the difference is they're heading in a right direction where we're going the other direction. They're still a communist country, but it's kind of interesting. China's trying to protect themselves by allowing their currency to be more independent and keeping it stable. Instead of letting it float with the dollar. And if they let it float with the dollar, the dollar's lost 97% of its value since the Fed came into play. And just in the last few years, the dollar's just been pummeled, because of the inflation here. And had China been allowing it to float, their currency would have just gone straight to the moon. It would have destroyed all their imports. So they don't want to destroy their import situation, and that's how they survive. So they want to have a stable money, and so of course the U.S. is going to claim they're manipulating their money, when in fact the U.S. is destroying the value of the money on purpose in order to repudiate debt. So it's just a political game, and it's nonsense coming from this side.
We're talking with Gary Barnett. He's a financial planner, advisor, and free market advocate. Phone number here is 847-931-1410. That's 931-1410. Have any questions, comments, observations, perspectives, give us a call, and we will be back after a few messages.
We reduce children to their lowest common denominator.
57% of us are functionally illiterate.
For us, Excellence is a thing of the past.
We killed the teachers and students at Columbine.
We are all trained to follow orders. Good.
We have learned to be tolerant of all people, except whites, Christians, and males.
27% of us are put on drugs.
The rest of us take the illegal ones. 2/3 of us believe that from each according to his ability to each according to his need is part of the preamble to the U.S. Constitution.
7 out of 10 of us don't know either of the senators in our state.
We just placed 19th out of 21 countries on math scores, ahead of the Ivory Coast and Sri Lanka.
We elected
George W. Bush
as president
and re-elected him.
And 9 out of 10 of us are products of the public schools.
This message paid for by the Illinois Indoctrinators Association.
Hello friends, this is Kenneth John, and Freedom Rings needs your help. I would like to get back to a two-hour show, but that costs money. You can help by contributing to the Heartland Institute, Illinois' own libertarian think tank, with a tax-deductible contribution. The Heartland Institute is an independent, nonprofit research organization in operation for 17 years. Joseph Bast, Heartland's president, is a frequent guest on this program. 90% of what you contribute to Heartland comes back to Freedom Rings to pay for this ad. By contributing $25 or more, you will receive monthly publications including School Reform News, Environment and Climate News, and The Heartlander, the Heartland Institute's monthly newsletter. So please call 312-377-4000 to contribute and be sure to mention Freedom Rings. That's 312-377-4000. Or you can contribute by credit card on the internet by going to Heartland's website at heartland.org. Again, remember to mention Freedom Rings, and thank you for your support.
Ever think that you should be getting more out of your computer? Maybe you need a go-to tech guy. A go-to tech guy is somebody who knows computers inside and out and can help you with yours. John Spazieri is a real go-to tech guy. John Spazieri is a 20-year tech veteran who can help you get more out of your computer. Need software installed and configured? Call John. Want to learn word processing or Excel spreadsheets? Call John. John Spazieri comes to your home, works with you one-on-one on your machine, and shows you step-by-step how to do things you've always wanted to do with your computer. Want to upgrade your computer? Call John. Need to build a wireless network? Call John. Call John Spazieri at area code 630-858-6933. That's 630-858-6933. John Spazieri. Make him your go-to tech guy.
Watch the police and the tax man miss me.
All right, we are back with Freedom Rings. We're talking with Gary Barnett. We're talking about, big government, inflation, war, and they all seem to be all connected. Let's see. Well, I'm sure where I do have when I have anarcho-capitalists on, I guess I'd like to, although this could go on for hours. The old bugaboo argument amongst libertarians is limited government versus complete anarcho-capitalism. Why don't you think there's a golden mean of just having a government that protects our rights and beyond that?
First off, no government has ever existed at that level.
Right.
So not even this one. I am a realist. I understand that, you know, when I tell people I'm an anarchist, and I'm a peaceful anarchist, by the way. But when I believe in a stateless society, and I understand given what we have in this country, that's not going to happen. I still believe in it. I believe it would work. I think Murray Rothbard laid out the best case ever, you know, for how that could happen. But I've always stated as well that, yeah, if we had a government that was completely void of any power or force over the individual, and that their only position was to protect natural rights, that I would accept that, even though I would rather have a stateless society, that I certainly would accept that if we could get a government you know, at that level. Not that we've ever had it. I mean, when we had our first Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, you know, there was no president. The federal government had no power to tax. And by not having any power to tax and gain control over people's private property, you know, they really had no power over the individual. The states held all the power at that time. Now, the Articles were flawed in many ways, but when the Constitution came along, and that was basically a coup by the Hamiltonians, you know, it vastly increased the power of the federal government and vastly reduced the power of the states and the individual. Most people, especially constitutionalists, don't look at it that way, but one reading of Article 1, Section 8 should be enough to, you know, take care of that, that kind of thinking. But, at any rate, you know, no piece of paper is going to, or set of rules, which is what that's supposed to be, can possibly have any effect or work at all unless they're, upheld 100% and enforced 100%.
Right. Well, and I think there has to be a culture that goes along with whatever the
law is. No, you have to have the people involved, all of them. Yes.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
And that's why maybe I adhere to more of the Henry David Thoreau aspect of it, when we're ready for it, the best government would be with, you know, no government at all. I don't think we're ready for it. I think I would point out to, you know, something like Somalia. When Somalia devolved into what we consider an anarchic state, what has developed is a lot of lawlessness.
There haven't been
protection, as far as I know. There haven't been a lot of different competing protection associations that are adhering to any kind of moral premise.
But I don't consider Somalia ever as being an anarchy. You know, the definition of anarchy is dual. You know, one is government without the state, the other is chaos. Well, chaos to me is not anarchy. Peaceful anarchy,
right,
does not allow violence or force of one over another. You have to have, and it's not that you have to have a government to oversee that, the people themselves have to understand that force is not allowed. And not, you know, put up with it. It can be done privately, but in a private market, in a free market. But, you know, and if you've got that kind of society, you're not going to have, when you've got an entire populace that understands what's going on, you know, you're not going to have total chaos. When, you know, Somalia and all of these countries, you know, all of those situations are controlled and purposely run, you know, with puppets. U.S. has been involved in almost all of them, either through the CIA or through the actual military force. You know, it's what's happened in Libya, what's happened in Egypt. You know, all of those situations are controlled by the U.S. And their puppets. The same that happened in Iraq, you know, with Saddam Hussein, and in Afghanistan. So you've got, you know, these situations to me are not anarchy. It is total chaos, and it's planned chaos through power structure. So, you know, I don't take offense that, you know, anarchy in the mind of a true anarchist, a peaceful anarchist, has nothing to do with chaos. It has only to do with people being free to do as they choose, so long as they're not harming any other or their property or impeding upon their freedom.
Right, and I do understand that, but I refer to Somalia because I do remember a recent article of, I don't know if it was 10 years ago or so, talking about this what they thought was an experiment in anarchy at the time. So I was, even Reason Magazine was pointing it out as a possibility.
Well, that should have been a first clue. Sorry.
All right, I can't argue with that. All right, let's go back. Well, no, I could talk. Okay, one more thing, and then I want to talk about the martial law in this country. But how about children's rights? What about the handicapped? Those cat really can't even stand up for themselves. How does that quite work in an anarchistic situation?
Well, it worked for 150 years in this country without any problem. The problems began after government got more power, more regulatory oversight over this. So, you know, people didn't die in the street in the past. You know, in the 19th century, when we had the biggest growth in history, we had, with the exception of the Civil War and some of the times around there, you know, for most of that century, we had tremendous growth. We had, tremendous growth in technology, and pretty much as free a society as it had existed. our money was stable for well over 125 years in a row. You know, people were taken care of by their neighbors, by their friends, by their church, by their family. People did not just roll around and die in the street because they got older, had problems. And, you know, today people can't even accept any responsibility for that. They think if the government's not there, everyone is just going to be, you know, laying in the street dying. And that's just not the case. It's just not real. The reason that people are in institutions and the government's taking care of them is because the government has structured a system where that is the norm. The entire healthcare system, the entire nursing home system, the first thought in most families' mind now, if they're, one of the parents gets old or gets dementia or something, they immediately dump them into a facility instead of bringing them home and taking care of them. And, you know, it's a completely different mentality. It's a different moral behavior, different structure. And it's happened over a long period of time, and that can change. That's one of the areas where my optimism lies in a situation where, surviving is forced upon the individual, and they have to take care of themselves. When that happens, they will take care of their family as well.
Okay, I do want to go back to the police state, or we could again say that it's sure. Really military state now in this country. We've had courts through George Bush and reinstituted through Obama, the Patriot Act, which has totally taken away Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights. We have a president that has asserted the right to assassinate American citizens without any kind of due process of law, without any openness at all, as a matter of fact. We don't even know what the process is, how he decides who's an enemy of a citizen enemy of the state that needs to be executed. And now with the passage of the National Defense Authorization Act, it authorized that the military can come in a person's home, take a U.S. citizen away, throw him in a Gitmo or wherever else in the world, I suppose, and basically just throw the key away.
Sure. I mean, that's in the initial legislation, that was Section 1031 of that act. In the final version, it was Section 1021. And there's absolutely no limitation. On the say-so of one person, any American can be disappeared, put in a black site, tortured, held indefinitely, murdered. It's under the guise of legality now, with the passage of this legislation. The assassination of Americans is the same, and that's already happened many times. And of course, the two situations recently, with the, gentleman overseas and his son and his son's friends in Yemen, where they were American citizens and just absolutely murdered, by drones, U.S. drones. You know, that's already begun, and it's happened before. So you've got a situation where the military has complete and total presence around the entire United States. You've got checkpoints, you've got TSA and NSA. The Department of Homeland Security is a monster. And they basically now, with all this new legislation and the 100-mile rule, from borders, and they're actually interior, doing checkpoints all over the United States. The latest one was in Florida. And so they, you know, these things are now completely in place. Now, and this is completely tyrannical. But the real fear here, these people are structured and set up to do this. And without resistance, every single American, could be at risk in the future. And martial law certainly, is very possible, I think likely, once civil unrest becomes evident.
Well, it's really a scary situation. I was going to mention is that even Stalin had show trials. Even he had to act as if there was some kind of process of justice going on first before he had people executed.
I'll tell you, if anyone would take just a few minutes and read the 14 planks of Marxism and read the 14 planks of communism, or fascism, excuse me, the 14 situations of fascism, the 10 planks of communism, you'll see that the United States will hit almost every one of them on the head. I mean, we're in an oligarchy, we've got a corporatist financial system, we've got a fascist system here. And I know those terms seem offensive to some, But you can't look at the pure definition of either of those and not understand that the United States is just completely embroiled in this type of government.
Well, there's a lot of Republicans who believe in American exceptionalism, and I guess we could say that America's an exceptionally fascist state.
At this point, very much so. I cannot tolerate the Americans are the best situation. I don't understand how a country could be in 100 and I don't know what we're in now, 170 countries, 900 bases all around the world, at war with what, 6, 7, 8 different countries and threatening more, complete and total imperialism, and be called exceptional in that we're an exceptional warfare state at this point.
Absolutely. All right, we got to take one quick call. We have Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Ken, how you doing today? I was enjoying the program. I'm just wondering why you guys are so concerned. I mean, after all, the government did just put itself at Ruby Ridge and Waco. I mean, they were self-forced. They didn't kill those people.
Well, at least they try to give an excuse for it. That would be my point, Mike. At least they try to give an excuse. They didn't put it into law. go ahead.
Well, yeah, but the whole point is it's not like they went down and got a bunch of armored personnel carriers from an army base to attack the people at Waco with. I mean,
right.
They restrained themselves. They could have just dropped a bomb from 50,000 feet and called it a day.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys, enjoy the program.
Thanks,
I'll keep
Mike.
Listening. Bye.
Any comments, Gary?
No, I mean, you know, things have been going on in this country a long time, but we now... everything is under the cover of legality.
Right.
What happened in Waco was heinous and horrible, and that should have been enough to get the people to stand up and just, get rid of the government at that point, or at least start over with something new. They didn't do it. And that was here at home, with people watching on TV while little kids were burned up. So,
right.
That's part of the reason that my attitude is, that there's not going to be substantial change or any kind of peaceful revolution or even other unless we have something that forces that, such as an economic collapse.
Well, yeah, if we had any kind of modicum of a free press in this country, after the NDAA had passed, you would have thought there would have been 5-inch bold headlines, martial law declared.
Yeah. Well, I write about it every day, and it's free where I get it, but you're not going to see it in the mainstream. The mainstream press is owned and controlled, and all of it, 100%. And if you're not looking at alternative news, you're not really going to know much.
So how do we, you think the burgeoning influence of the Internet, maybe that's...
Oh, I think it's phenomenal, and that's why there's legislation being proposed on a regular basis to be able to shut the Internet down or control it. And that's gonna escalate. That particular type of legislation is gonna become more prevalent, I think, on a constant basis going forward.
But there it was, at least for now, we've won a battle for freedom because the powers that be backed down when they saw that there was actually resistance out there to...
I think it's temporary. It's gonna have to be enforced, dramatically, because the Internet is the thorn in the side of government at this stage. I mean, that's how they're getting exposed and how things are the truth's being told. And without it, you've got a completely controlled people through a controlled state media.
How do you, the other side of the issue, of course, is, if there is intellectual property rights, how do you protect that?
Well, I don't believe in any kind of a patent system or at all. I mean, I believe in free markets, so I don't believe in intellectual property. I think having a thought in your mind is not something that should be protected. I think
that's probably worth another hour of discussion. Gary Barnett,
thank you very much for
being on the program. But do you have a website you'd like to throw out?
Yes, actually, I waited 5 years to start it. Just started in October. It's Gary. My name, GaryBBarnett.com.
Very good.
And, I'd love for anyone to go on and take a look.
Thank you very much for being on the program today.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Great. All right. This, from Ayn Rand, quotation of the week. The difference between a welfare state and a totalitarian state is a matter of time.
Communications.